Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant! Bale getting it alone! It's scoring for Tottenham!
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run! He scored! And he's away, Aaron Lennon! Crouch! Yes!
Welcome to another edition of the all-new, all-dangerous Wheeler Dealer Radio. We're here, and most importantly, it's WrestleMania week, so I am Skipjack, the baddest man alive. I'm also here with Ben, who's Lennon's eyebrow, the charismatic enigma. Say hi to the people, Ben.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but hi, everybody.
That's what I thought. And the icon of Spurs podcasting and blogging and law, Brian Ashlock is back with us. Brian.
That's me. I know exactly what you're talking about. That is an accurate description of what I am.
Thank you all for making it. I'm sure this has already been more pleasant for you and our listeners than the Liverpool game. But let's jump into the Liverpool game. Brian, since you're back, we'll start with you. What would you rather do, rewatch the Liverpool game or get hit in the face with a bat wrapped in barbed wire and covered in, let's say, poo?
Oh, God. You know, I'm going to take the bat. Like, the Liverpool game was so – it was really that bad. Like, I mean, you know, what was it? A minute and a half in, we score an own goal. And I remember I was watching this game with my girlfriend, and she goes, "Oh, they scored already?" And I was like, "Yeah." And I was like, "That's pretty much what I expected." And then we watched the replay, and she goes, "You guys scored on yourselves." And I was like, "Yeah." And so it was just – it was really all downhill from there once – you know. And I know, Greg, you said this, you know, several times, like, on Twitter and on the site. But, like, I mean, this was totally an expected result. Like, I expected us to lose this game. But just the lack of effort and the lack of enthusiasm the team showed for the game as a whole was really disappointing.
The lack of character. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, the lack of character, the lack of gut that we is just not good.
No, it's not. And I'm not surprised rumors came out that Tim Sherwood punched people after the game because we sucked, we didn't look good, and Tim Sherwood is Tim Sherwood. We'll get back to that later. I was really unhappy with this game. I think Brian summed it up pretty well. We didn't look ready for it, and I don't know if that's just how we prepped or if that's just, you know, an own goal in the first 2 minutes just takes it out of you.
Well, we didn't prep. By all accounts. And that's kind of the whole thing.
Get into that. Ben, why don't you explain that for the people?
So for those of you who have been living under a rock, before the game, Tim Sherwood was asked how it felt rewatching the first Liverpool game where we lost 5-1. And he said, "I don't know. I haven't seen it. I was too scared to watch." And by all accounts, it sounds like he did no preparation. In another interview, he mentioned that he hadn't really seen a lot of Liverpool, but they're scoring a lot of goals. And you could tell that nobody had any idea what to expect. There was no tactical setup designed to, you know, nullify the well-known threats that Liverpool possess. There was no game plan, and everybody knew that. And so I think when you're going out there, basically sent to the firing squad, you know, how much are you going to really put up a fight? Like, you know the end is coming. It's just a matter of how many bullets are going to hit you.
I'll confess that, you know, in a game where sort of everything just goes off the track so early and so badly, there are maybe limited things to learn. But there are still things to learn. If nothing else, you have videotapes showing how Liverpool players perform directly against Spurs players. And the fact that, I mean, you know, who knows? Maybe he's blowing smoke up the media's skirt for, I can't even imagine what the reason would be. Or what he was trying to accomplish by those comments, rather. But I can believe it. I mean, I could believe that Tim Sherwood would do that. He's the worst. Tim Sherwood is the worst. I don't like him very much. Brian, you're a big fan of him, though, right?
No, I hate him. I think the most baffling thing for me was even before the game was the tactical decisions he made in the lineup that he put out. I mean,
you're saying tactical with, like, air quotes, right?
Yeah. No, okay. I got the finger quotes. Yeah. I mean, it's just – I mean, you're playing a double pivot basically of Nabil Bentaleb and Gylfi Sigurdsson against a team with, you know, probably the strongest forward line in the league and a midfield that's played supremely well all throughout the season. And you're asking a kid who's making, you know, I don't know, his 10th, 12th Premier League start ever, and a guy who's typically a number 10 to hold down the midfield. And look, I understand that you have players like Sandra, who's not fully fit, Kapuwe is out for, you know, an extended period of time. But you have Dembele, who was reasonably fit. I mean, Sandra was named to the bench, so maybe he could have played at least 45 or 60 minutes. And it's just a baffling lineup to look at and say, like, yeah, this is – we're totally set up to stop Liverpool. I mean, this was a lineup that he put out that – our options were we were going to concede four or we were going to score four. And obviously we conceded the four.
I think you look at the lineup and you see the method to the madness, but it's just madness. Tim Sherwood has a bad habit of sometimes getting things right and not knowing why they worked and then just letting it ride. I mean, he put out the same lineup that ended the Southampton game and thought, well, shit, we came back from two goals down and won 3-2. This must be the way we should be playing.
In fairness to him, sorry to interrupt, but that was something that we maligned AVB for, is that AVB put the same lineup out no matter how it continued to play. And even if he made late game adjustments that worked, he would not go back to them.
But this is where I think you're seeing Sherwood's naivety. And we joke about how he's not experienced, but this is where you see it. See, after that Southampton game, Bentaleb-Sigurdsson midfield is something I'd want to see again against Sunderland or Aston Villa or someone who we could impose ourselves on a bit. I can believe that with the right setup, the Spurs team can beat Liverpool. There's enough talented players on this team that we should be better than we've been this year. That is not the time to try A, that pairing in general, and B, a pairing that new. I mean, it's absolutely insane.
So the thing is to go back to what Brian said about AVB, is that with AVB, he was putting out, you know, the same kind of lineup every time, but he was putting out that same kind of lineup to execute a plan, however flawed that may be. Tim Sherwood, we saw after the Newcastle game where we destroyed Newcastle, and for like the next three matches, he benched Christian Eriksen because Christian Eriksen wasn't in the lineup for Newcastle. So clearly, you know, that wasn't something he needed to do. He never took, okay, this is what worked in Newcastle, and this is the different game we have to play, and so let me adjust what worked for Newcastle based on the opposition. He was just like, I don't know, this worked somehow, so hopefully it'll keep working.
Maybe.
And that's sort of what we saw here, was that, well, it worked against Southampton. Why wouldn't it work against Liverpool? Because I have no idea what works or what doesn't work. I just saw this worked one time, so let's go with it. And that's incredibly alarming.
Well, another thing, and I will give Sherwood a pass on this, and because I've given AVB a pass on this all season, is we in this game and in pretty much all the games this season, we have had an incredible number of individual errors that have led to goals. I mean, you see, you have Eriksen doesn't track the runner on the first goal that leads to Cobble's own goal. You have Michael Dawson with a I don't know what he was doing on that pass across to Cobble. You have Vertonghen that has an error. And it's just like – I think I saw from Who Scored, they had a stat that Spurs have had more individual errors that have led to goals than any other team in Europe's top five leagues. And that is exactly what our season has been. It has been individual errors. It has been, you know, misplaced passes in the midfield. It has been errant back passes. It's been lazy passes by the fullbacks to the center backs. It's just been like our team as a whole this season has been either not on the same page or lazy or, you know, lacking character or whatever it is. Like, we've made too many dumb mistakes.
And it's totally understandable because you look at this. And I've been banging this drum for a while now, but we started the season with a system, and it was AVB's system, and it was super flawed, but at least we were defensively stout. After that Newcastle game, for whatever reason, we don't know, he threw that out the window, and that's when the mistakes started. and they got worse because they didn't know what they were doing. And then Sherwood comes in, and this is somewhat in his defense, but not entirely, because he couldn't fix it. But Sherwood starts playing a new system. So now they're learning a new system on the fly. I have to throw all the old stuff out the window. Probably don't respect Sherwood, or at least, you know, Sherwood might not be the best at getting his point across or implementing his system. So you've got this mishmash of two systems, neither of which has really worked in any sort of successful way. I mean, it's a wonder they can kick the ball to each other, which they don't do very well most of the time.
And that's the thing. It's been kind of a big debate going back and forth on the site among people who say, well, individual errors is the story of our season. The players are letting us down because they keep making the mistakes. And then the flip side of that is, there's a reason these mistakes keep happening, and it's because there is no overarching plan. It's a bunch of guys who don't know what they're doing together, who don't seem to have direction, who don't seem to have respect for their manager, who don't play like they're playing together or like they're playing for a purpose. They're just out there kicking a ball around. And so when you put players out there in a position like that, those mistakes are going to happen because they're under constant pressure and they don't know what to do about it. And I don't think – you know, we saw that this team, like you said, at the beginning of the season under ABB, was incredibly defensively sound. You know, there weren't these mistakes because the players knew what they were doing. And once they stopped having a plan and once they stopped knowing what was going on, that's when the mistakes really started creeping into the game. And so I can't help but say that, yes, there's individual mistakes, but it all starts with the manager. It's a top-down problem.
Here's the thing. We're not teenage girls who have to choose between a vampire and a werewolf. Why can't it be both? I mean, honestly, why not both? I mean,
I think one of the biggest points kind of in the favor that it's not a system thing is, like, I know that Michael and Brett Rambo both talked about this early in the season, is our players, especially under AVB, were dwelling on the ball too long in the attack. Like, there would be the right time to pick the pass, to play the through ball, to play a person in, and we would hold on the ball a second too long. They weren't errors that were costing us goals on the defensive end, but they were errors that were not leading to chances for us on the offensive end. Like, we weren't sure what to do with the ball in attack. And under Sherwood, it seems like Sherwood has told the guys, do whatever you want with the ball in attack. And so it's freed them up much more going forward. But when we're on the defensive, we have no structure and no system. And so what we need, in my mind anyway, is a structure that encompasses all areas of the game. Like, not just like, hey, go play offense, go play defense.
Crazy, Brian. Let's
I know it's ridiculous.
Not get carried away. I mean, we're not coached by Jose Mourinho or Phil Jackson or Mike Krzyzewski or anything. I mean, calm down.
You just need to have some sense of coherence. Like, every time Nabil Bentaleb gives the ball away in the middle of the park, like, I have a tiny aneurysm. Like, he's 19 years old, and I really do think that he has the potential to be a good player and a good Premier League player and a player that can be good for Spurs for a long time. But just, like, throwing him to the wolves and being like, here, you figure it out, is just so counterproductive to, like, his development. And so people get down on him because they see him as, like, the product of the Sherwood regime. And he is Sherwood's guy. And that's what he's going to get pegged as for, like, a while now. But he's actually a good player. But he's a little in over his head against Liverpool and Chelsea.
Especially as a DM, which is what basically Sherwood's playing him as, or at least some. That's the closest thing I can think of to describe where he's usually being deployed.
Which is ironic, because his best game for us, I think it was Newcastle, when he was getting really far forward and creating a lot in the final third, and it was, oh, wow, this Nabil Bentaleb kid might actually be good. But again, it's a problem of how you're using these players and the circumstances you're throwing them in.
And that's injury. I don't think Sherwood's throwing him there because he thinks that's the best position. I think he's throwing him there because Sandro and Capu aren't fit.
I really don't think Sherwood knows, though. I don't think he has the tactical knowledge to be like, hey, you know what he's better as? He's better as this guy who's more of an advanced playmaker. Sherwood doesn't even believe in holding midfielders. Like, it doesn't matter what Nabil Bentaleb plays to Sherwood. Like, he's just like, you go play in the middle somewhere. It's just like,
okay, I want to dissect this game. What could we have done to win it? Could we have played a more stout defensive midfield, or could we have had Alan Hutton run in from the stands and hit Luis Suarez in the face with a steel chair? Which would have helped us or us win this game more?
I think the former, because even with Luis Suarez crippled by chair, Liverpool still had enough else out there to destroy us with no plan.
Even if Luis Suarez was busted wide open?
They could have played a team of Martin Skrtels and they would have beat us 4-0.
Oh, that is the most depressing thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
Well, I think when you have a manager who's not only not on the touchline, but also too busy taking phone calls to actually manage the team, you just – there's no hope either way.
You haven't seen the girl he was on the phone with, Brian. I mean
– I'm sure she's beautiful, but
Sandra Redknapp is a nice-looking lady. Let me
and she's
you.
A hell of a finisher, I've heard. Yeah, she's much better than Darren Bent.
Yeah, yeah. Just ask Big Sam's daughter. Or is it
yeah.
Steve, oh, yeah. Bruce.
Steve Bruce?
Steve
Bruce's daughter,
damn
yeah.
Damn it.
In answer to your actual question, but given the people that we had available and that were like reasonably fit, like I don't know what other lineup Sherwood could have thrown out there. Like, I mean, Dembele and Sandro
has to start that game. I don't care if he comes off at halftime. The name of that game again, was keeping Liverpool from getting momentum early.
So the thing is Liverpool is one of the best counterattacking sides possibly in Europe right now. And so we played a high line with no pressure in the midfield, which essentially just played into their hands. We gave them all that space to run into behind the defense, and they punished us for it. You know, if we don't have a defensive midfield and we don't feel comfortable harrying them out of possession halfway up the pitch, then play a deeper line, pack into the box and break quickly. Play Chadli and Lennon on the wings with Eriksen as a number 10. I mean, there are any number
of things. Whoa. Eriksen as a number 10? Ben.
I know it sounds crazy,
Ben,
but I think
put
he
the
could
crack
be good
down.
There.
It's Chadli or Aaron Lennon or maybe Kyle Walker, but not Christian Eriksen. I mean,
and that is so maddening to me that he's like, it's like, hey, you know what? Here's a good idea. Let's play our best number 10 out wide on the left and see what kind of impact he has on the game. And then he doesn't have any impact. And you go, well, you know what? We should drop him. And it's just like, put him in the right spot. I mean,
he played
there were so many things wrong with this lineup. Like, I mean, and some of it, like, you can't even blame on Sherwood. Like, we were playing Naughton and Rose at fullbacks. Our fullback situation is horrendous. When you have John Flanagan as a better left back than Danny Rose, like, that's a problem, you know? And I don't know. There's nothing good about this lineup.
You know what I find interesting about this conversation? I feel the tone and exasperation of it mirrors the conversations that I've been having with Lennon's eyebrow about the How I Met Your Mother finale this week. I'm not sure which was worse, but
How I Met Your Mother at least had the correct answer staring them in the face for the past 9 years, and they decided to throw it out the window. Tim Sherwood, at least there was a question of was there anything to be done to stop Liverpool. So
hand,
congratulations, Tim Sherwood.
Mother, it's called How I Met Your Mother. In reality, it should have been called, you know, How I Decided to Bone Your Aunt Robin. And sorry, spoilers.
God, I forget.
And, you know, we're trying to call what we're doing football, and I'm really not sure that's what this is. That's not what it looks like at times. But, I mean, Sherwood really has lost the plot, similar to the way that the writers of How I Met Your Mother did.
I'm very proud that's very good, Ashlock. I'm proud of you for that one. That is a nice piece of wordplay. I think that How I Met Your Mother was worse, but only because I never want to watch any of that show again. And I will watch Spurs again, even if I won't enjoy it until we're coached by anyone next year, not named Tim Sherwood. Let's also talk about the stuff that came out after the game. There were rumors going around after the game that not only was Sherwood sacked, but that he'd had a punch-up with a player in the dressing room. Now, that has been sort of enough players debunked that on Twitter that I think we can say it doesn't happen. But how hilarious is it, or how sad is it, that Sherwood's regard is such, and the team's state is such, that I'm pretty sure all of us thought that was at least more than halfway likely being true.
I mean, that was
go ahead,
Ben.
Brian, go ahead.
Okay, all right, I'll go. That was the most exciting hour and a half of the Spurs season for me.
I wanted that to be true so badly. I don't even want Sherwood to get fired now, because the whole reason he's here is just fall on a sword for the rest of the season, but I wanted that to be true in the worst possible way. I wanted there to be videos of it.
Yeah, for me, I on Sunday, I had brought home work to do. And I would take any excuse to not do work. But instead of doing my work, I sat there for 2 hours on Twitter, desperately refreshing and praying to find out what exactly happened. It really was. It was the highlight of the year.
Who do we think he would have punched if there was actually a punch-up? Do we all think it's Jan Vertonghen?
I mean, it makes sense for it to be Vertonghen, but I feel like there's other likely sources for his ire. Like, I feel like maybe – I think he might have punched Hugo, like if he'd have punched anybody. Like, because Hugo's pretty outspoken and the way he used to be at Lyon and everything. I could see him
– But Hugo's got character though.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I mean, he's –
Did you see what Hugo did to Michu? He would kill Sherwood. Sherwood would mess with
him. I mean, he's obviously not going to punch Kabul or Sandro or Bentaleb.
I don't know. It could have been a I hit you because I love you kind of thing.
And
maybe he took it out on Bentaleb.
Sherwood's entire tenure has been marked by bad decision making. So, you know, not out of the realm of possibility.
I just wanted it so badly to be true because it would have been the perfect end to the Sherwood tenure. Like that, I mean, that he would have been a Spurs legend for like the rest of his life. Like we would have all talked about him like, oh, remember that time that Sherwood punched a player and then he got fired? And like we would have remembered him in such reverential tones that eventually we would have forgotten how shitty of a manager he was.
I think we'd remember him like Kanye, which is, you know, not out of the realm of possibility, even though that didn't happen. I kind of hope he goes crazy over the next, 6 weeks? I kind of hope he loses his mind and makes it super entertaining, because God only knows that would make things more entertaining than they've been. I mean, I know we're sort of through the worst part of our schedule, and we're probably not going to have any super awful thrashings, hopefully. God, I hope so, in our future. But I just end this nightmare.
It's a shame that that's what it's come to.
It is.
You know, from August when we thought we could win the title to now we're looking for off the field violence to distract ourselves from the fact that this season is so fucking terrible.
I hate Tim Sherwood. He is the worst. I'm so sick of Tim Sherwood.
I think, you know, just to be, you know, the counter opinion, I think Sherwood does have his benefits. And I'm resigned to this just because I'm a horrible pessimist. But he is going to be our manager next season. Like, you guys realize this, right?
No.
I mean, look, I thought
May Mizu never win another football game. Are you saying that out loud?
I'm serious. Like, I mean, look, I've been wrong before. I thought Gareth Bale was going to stay, but I really do think that like we are going to go into next season with Tim Sherwood as our manager. I think that is, and I think the sooner we all accept that, the better.
We just had a conversation about how a rumor came out that Tim Sherwood punched someone in the locker room, and we all believed it. Levy can't be that crazy. I mean, if Levy keeps Sherwood around, I'm all you moron, Enoch out, Levy out people, I will be right there with you. I will protest the fact that this club makes money off tickets right there with you. But he can't be that dumb. I mean, if he fired Juan de Ramos, like, he has to fire Tim Sherwood. If he fired Martin Yole, he has to fire Tim Sherwood. If he fired Terry Redknapp, he has to fire Tim Sherwood.
Actually conceive of a universe where this actually happens?
Yes, I can't, because all of the worst things always happen. No good things happen as a Spurs fan. When was the last time good things happened?
I don't know. That West Ham game last year was pretty sick.
Yeah. No good things. All is bad things. We always have bad things. We're going to have it's going to be September, October, and then like mid-October, Daniel Levy's going to go, ah, crap, I got to fire this guy. And then we're going to wind up with, you know, Chris Hughton or something. And it's just –
Do you remember when we had a not completely ridiculous conversation among the writers about would Chris Hughton be a viable candidate to coach Spurs right now?
Yeah, I remember that.
How much cocaine were we on when we had that conversation? Because I don't know how that happened.
I mean, this was coming off Chris Hughton when he was – who had he just managed? Was it
I think he got sacked from Newcastle?
Yeah, just after Newcastle, I think, when we thought, like, he did all right, you know. But I don't know. It's not viable anymore. He plays some horrible, boring football.
Womp, womp. Yeah, he'll be lucky to stay on at Norwich. So that really horribly sucked and was terrible and was awful, and I don't know why Ted ended up with Robin either. So let's look to the future of Spurs, which in a just universe will be Sherwood-less. You know, maybe the future was calling him in the stands and letting him know about his job in League Two, managing whoever replaces Pompey. So let's talk transfers. Let's strap on our belts and head into backcountry. A couple rumors came out this week. Let's start with the one I want to happen most. Lukaku's agent said that he has talked to Daniel Levy. We talked a little bit about this last week, but God, there's a chance Lukaku's going to come here, right, guys? Like I say as I unzip my pants.
Yeah, it all hinges on Everton. I mean, this seems clearly like...
No, it doesn't hinge on Everton. Everton's never going to keep Lukaku.
They might. I mean, this How? Is kind of... Well, okay, so Everton makes the Champions League, then they have £30 million. Then they can buy Lukaku.
They make £30 million if they get in the group stage.
Would you not be willing to gamble that on signing Lukaku? I mean...
If you're Bill Kenwright, yeah, I don't think he's going to gamble that.
I don't know. I mean, they have Leighton Baines, who they could finally cash in on. If David Moyes stays at Man United, you know, Ever is not getting any younger and is finishing the season hurt, they could finally pay obscene amounts of money for Leighton Baines, and then they'll have money. I mean, this seems like a, hey, Everton, somebody else could take Lukaku. You should pony up the cash. And if they don't, maybe he'll wind up in our laps, but... I think Everton is very much in the driver's seat right now, and so much so that it may be worth rooting for Arsenal to finish in fourth ahead of them.
Shut your mouth. I'm skeptical of Everton's ability to afford Lukaku. I think Chelsea will sell him to another Premier League team. Hell, I think they'd sell him to us if we pony up the money. But that's going to be north of $30 million they're going to want for him. I don't see Everton coming up with that kind of cheddar.
I mean, I think Chelsea have shown an increasing desire over the last couple of years to fuck with us. And so I don't see any reason why they would change that.
ABB's not here anymore.
Yeah, but like, I mean, I still think that they see us as the longer that they keep us less competitive, the longer that, you know, their position within or anybody's position within the top four is more solid. And so like – you know, with the resurgence of Liverpool and the emergence of Manchester City, you have now, even without Manchester United, you still have six clubs that are competing for four spots. And you have to assume that eventually United's going to get it together. So you've got seven competing for four spots. And why would you strengthen a direct rival for any of those four positions?
Sold Mata to United. I mean.
But I think that was just a Jose kind of power play. Like Jose had something, there had to be something there that we didn't understand. Like Jose,
there clearly was, but they could have sold him somewhere else.
But that's the thing. You're talking about Jose making power plays. I mean, in the lead up to the Chelsea match, Jose was so dismissive of our team. It was completely insulting. And he clearly doesn't rate Lukaku. And so if he thinks we're so insignificant and doesn't give a shit about Lukaku, I don't know that he won't make a similar kind of power play and say, fine, take him, do your worst.
I mean, we were talking about this in the newsroom today, and you know, I was going to say something about how I don't think Lukaku is that prolific of a scorer, and you know, he's never really demonstrated outside of Belgium anyway an incredible ability to be like a 20 or 30 goal a season striker. But I mean, you look at his stats, he's 20 years old. He's basically the same age as Harry Kane. And already he has he has 17 goals in a season for West Brom. He's got 12 so far this season. Say he makes it to 15. Like, as a 20-year-old, a couple of seasons under your belt where you've scored 15-plus goals in the Premier League, I mean, I'd take that. I mean, I don't think he's anywhere near the finished product. And, you know, maybe he never winds up being, like, one of the greatest strikers in the world. But I think he's certainly someone who has the skill and the ability that you can build around.
He reminds me a lot of Balotelli. In that, not necessarily in the way he plays, but in that he can be very dangerous, but he's not as consistently dangerous as some people think he is.
I think that's fair.
I don't think he's plagued by the same sort of emotional instability.
No. Right, I don't mean that. I just mean, like, they both have a reputation of being super dangerous strikers, and they are, and that they can do incredible things, but I don't think they do those incredible things with the kind of regularity that their reputations sort of would lead you to believe if you didn't sort of drill down a little more closely.
I think that's fair, but again, Lukaku doesn't have the head case problems that Balotelli has, and he's 20 years old.
Fair enough.
And my point was going to be that, you know, you have to look at the teams that he's played with. Like, 17 goals on a West Brom team where his best supporting players are, you know, Malumbu and Shane Long and, you know, like, I mean, 17 goals on that West Brom team is an accomplishment. And while his supporting cast at Everton is better, I don't think that you could argue that there are a lot of players on that team that are demonstrably better than any of the players on Spurs. You know, like, I mean, Ross Barkley is very good, but I don't know if I would take him straight up over Christian Eriksen. And, you know, he plays with Deulofeu, but is Deulofeu, you know, that much better than, say, an Eric Lamella or an Andros Townsend?
He's Spanish. He has to be. Duh.
Yeah, obviously. But, you know, I think he's never had an opportunity to play with real top-tier talent. And I think if you put him in the mix with a team like a Chelsea or a Spurs or whatever other big teams are going to be in for him, because I'm sure there are going to be plenty, that he would all of a sudden be much more prolific.
Well, okay, so let's, for the sake of argument, let's just say Everton's not in the running. And let's say Spurs are interested. What other teams would he go for him? I don't think there's any team in Italy. Juve is the only team that I would think would want him, and they've got enough strikers. I don't know if there are any other big clubs in England. If Suarez somehow left Liverpool, maybe they would go after him. If Chelsea would be getting rid of him, obviously, I don't think United need another striker. I mean, City doesn't need another striker. Arsenal, maybe, but he doesn't seem like a Wenger player to me. Or at least the kind of player that Wenger goes after anymore. I mean, if you won't get big, strong guys in defense, why would he go for him on attack? Maybe if Monaco sold Falcao, like a straight swap, or at least partly swap, I could see that maybe happening. Maybe Atleti, if they get Costa and do another sort of swap deal. I can't think of any other teams. And I'm sure there are, and I'm just forgetting them. Maybe Dortmund?
It depends. I mean, you know, one other factor that we haven't really talked about is Benteke just went down for the season with a ruptured Achilles tendon, and he'll be out of the World Cup. And Benteke was the starting striker for Belgium ahead of Lukaku. And so now Lukaku is going to have a World Cup to show what he can do. And if he turns it on, there could be a lot of suitors we might not have thought about who say, oh, this guy might be worth looking at.
I mean, I think you're looking at Champions League clubs, though, pretty much across the board. I think United would be more interested than you might. I think this summer is going to be a summer where United is linked with everyone and anyone that is any good, because they just need to improve. Like, whether or not Van Persie is going to be healthy consistently is a question. Rooney's possibility of wanting to leave is a question. Hernandez seems to be out the door. Like, I mean, United is a team that could be in for a striker. I don't think any French clubs are going to be good enough to attract him. I mean, I know he's from Belgium, and he's, you know, so he maybe he speaks some French or is at least familiar with France. But, like, the big clubs in France, Monaco, like, I don't think is going to be a player for him. And
even if they get rid of Falcao?
I mean, I don't know. I can't see them getting rid of Falcao just because they're going to be in the Champions League next year. I can't see. I mean, it's going to take a big money offer from like club like Chelsea, but Monaco are already paying him so much money that I can't imagine him going anywhere. PSG don't need him. You know, maybe a club like Lyon or Marseille wants him, but they're not going to have Champions League football.
Or the money.
I think Dortmund is the most logical big club that needs him. I can't – there's not going to be a lot of clubs with the money or the prestige to get him.
Yeah, and then there's the flip side, which we haven't considered, which is are Spurs going to spend that much money on a striker? I mean, right now we kind of have an acceptable striking core, assuming that Soldado remembers how to kind of score next year. But we just spent a lot of money on a striker. Are we going to spend a lot of money on a striker when we kind of need defenders next year? I mean, we're going to have to, regardless of whether or not Vertonghen goes, you know, we're going to need to buy defenders in the offseason. At least one center back, a left back, you know, maybe a backup left back, depending on how things go. I mean, it's, you know, are we going to even want to buy Lukaku if he's available?
I mean, I think that you always have to be open to the possibility of adding a world class striker. But I mean, like, I mean, you know, that's the thing that to me has always separated the Spurs from all the other clubs in the Premier League and in the Champions League is that we don't have that one world class goal scorer. And, you know, you can argue that Chelsea don't have that. They don't have a great strike force, but they also have Eden Hazard, who is crazy good. And Spurs don't have anything like that. We had Gareth Bale, who was scoring goals left, right, and center. But now that he's gone, we don't have that. And I think until – I mean, we have people who are solid, like Adebayor and Soldado possibly. But you don't have a guy who could possibly be a world beater.
Yeah, I mean – we could use a striker. I would like to get Lukaku. This team left at least $20 million on the table this offseason because we know we were about to pay $30 million for Willian, and we went and got Eriksen instead when, you know, Kio Jabroni got involved. So, you know, it's not like – I think we've got money to spend, especially if we end up selling Vertonghen.
So here's a question. Let's say, you know, the finances are available, but it would come at the expense. Let's say we could get Luke Shaw or Alexandro or, you know, a big-name left back, or Lukaku. And if we get Lukaku, we keep Danny Rose next year. Who do you take?
Lukaku. I want to see goals, man. I want to see goals.
I think that there are definitely better left backs than Danny Rose to be had for, you know, $10 million or less. What's the guy's name at Wolfsburg?
Ricardo Rodriguez.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to cost. I don't. Yeah, and Dzeko. I don't think Rodriguez is going to cost more than 12 or 10 million pounds. But I think, you know, a guy like Luke Shaw is going to cost at least as much as a guy like Lukaku would. So, goddamn, if I had to choose, I'd probably take the left back.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think we're in the running for Shaw, but yeah, we need a left back. Rose isn't the answer. He gets, if nothing else, he gets too tired late in games, but he also makes dumb mistakes and can't stay healthy. But speaking, since we're talking about Lukaku, who we are clearly a stalking horse for, let's talk about another guy we were a stalking horse for. Ben Tekkers has died or blown his Achilles tendon out. Same deal, depending on who you ask. So he ain't going anywhere. Do we think anything about this? I kind of thought that we are not getting – when it was clear that his agent was playing us, I sort of thought, yeah, we're never getting him. He's going to either stay at Villa and flounder or stay at Villa and go to a sort of more big money club than us. Did you guys still think we were going to potentially get him? Ben?
I think if the price was right, we would have moved for him in the summer again. But I don't know. After this season and now on top of his injury, I don't know that – I mean, he's definitely not – judging by this last season, he's definitely not worth the asking price we would have paid for him last year, especially considering we could get a guy like Remy for probably around the same, you know, cut-rate price who has had a better, at least more consistent tenure in the Premier League. So Yeah, I'm not too bothered by Benteke one way or the other.
Yeah, I was never too high on him. I thought that the price last year was super inflated just based on the fact that he was young and he had a good season in the Premier League. But I thought a lot of that was just based on him overpowering players, and it wasn't based on any sort of technical ability or any sort of demonstrated ability to be in the right place at the right time or create his own shot or anything. So
well,
let's be fair.
He did drag Aston Villa out of relegation last year.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm not trying to deny that he was totally huge that year, but I don't think that I didn't see anything from him that showed me that he was going to be a guy that could consistently do that at the Premier League level.
Fair enough.
And I can say that with the benefit of hindsight now, obviously. But, I think he wasn't worth the price this summer, and I don't think he's going to be – or last summer, and I don't think he's going to be worth whatever they want for him this summer. So I think there are better targets out there. I think, like Ben said, I think there's guys like Loic Remy out there. There's you have a guy like maybe a Demba Ba who's available. There's plenty of guys across Europe who could also possibly be available and could probably provide you the same, 10 or 12 goals, 14 goals that Benteke would get you.
Yeah, so he's not coming. Speaking of players not going places, Barcelona just got slapped with a potential transfer ban by FIFA this week. Obviously, they're going to appeal it, but their strategy seems to be this shouldn't have – the ban is over a bunch of international under-18s. They broke some rules getting them there. And the ban – the Barca counter-argument to this seems to be, hey, but our training facilities are great, so they should be allowed to be here, which – sounds like what you would come to expect from Barcelona these days. In addition to being pretty funny, this could potentially keep Vertonghen out of their mitts. I'm skeptical FIFA will either apply this in time for the summer or apply it at all, but Barca's hilarious defense makes me think there's a glimmer of hope. Do you guys think there is any chance that this actually goes through, and how does it affect Vertonghen and maybe Lloris's status in the summer? Brian?
Well, I mean, like you said, there's going to be an appeal. They're going to appeal to the Court of Arbitration of Sport. And so depending on how fast they hear that, that may put the ban on hold, at least for the summer. I don't know how much it affects, like, Vertonghen and Lloris. It definitely affects, like, the signings of players like Marc-Andre Ter Stegen. And it might even affect the signing of Halilovic from Croatia.
God, that would make me so happy.
Which would be fun for as a Spurs fan if he didn't end up going to Barcelona. I don't know. I'm skeptical because I think that FIFA has in the past always found ways to make allowances for big clubs. I think the teams that have been hit with transfer bans and, sort of FIFA disciplinary actions have always been smaller clubs. And I think it would be outside of the norm for them to hold Barca to something like this.
I mean, the biggest sort of sanction I can think of that actually stuck was Malaga being banned from Europe this year. I can't think, like, Chelsea just paid off the club that they offended. You're right. I can't think of any major clubs that this is sort of stuck with.
The one thing that maybe separates it is that because it's so many players from so many places, I don't know if Barcelona have the ability to just throw money at the problem.
Their up yours defense, too, might not help their case.
Right. So it's possible. Either way, though, I think if we get, I think definitely if we get Frank de Boer, Vertonghen will stay. But I think if we get any real manager and show signs of going in the right direction, I think regardless of what happens with Barcelona, Vertonghen will be less inclined to force his way out.
Do we think Lloris is going to try to force his way out?
No,
I don't think he has anywhere to go.
Here. Yeah, I mean, what top club really is looking for a goalkeeper? I mean, you can make the argument that Monaco is, but I think Lloris has made the case that he's pretty well done with Ligue 1. And I don't think, Bayern and Dortmund don't need keepers. He's not going to go to Italy. Ter Stegen seemed like he was the guy for Barcelona. Real Madrid seemed perfectly happy with where they're at. I don't see where he would go.
Atleti's the only other thing I can think of, but their money situation's so bizarre. I don't, like, Levy would ask for too much for them.
But I mean, if they keep, if they somehow manage to keep Courtois as some sort of make weight in any potential, like, Diego Costa deal.
You're right. That's actually something that I think is probably going to happen. I don't think Courtois is going anywhere because I don't think Roman's going to force checkout anytime soon.
I think what you'll see this summer is it'll be Courtois and what's his name?
Fernando.
Yes, Fernando Torres. I was going to call him Fernandez. Fernando Torres.
Briggs will kill you for that.
Yeah, direct swap for Diego Costa. I think that's probably what you're going to see.
Well, that wraps up Backcountry for the week, unless there's any other transfer rumors out there, which there aren't. So let's move on. The other big news this week, Spurs issued a report talking about the season and the progress they've made on the stadium. I saw this as sort of a mea culpa from Levy. I think we're going to get a very contrite, if bolstering his resume, letter at the end of the year, which this sort of did, making the case that the fact that we're not in the Champions League driver's seat is disappointing, and that's progress considering where we were all those years ago, which I am fully on board with. Then they talked about how the stadium's moving forward. I believe they think that we could be in it by, was it 2017?
Yeah.
Yeah, and talking about how land issue is sort of the last major hurdle. I'm sure everyone can guess my take on this, so let's start with yours, Brian.
Well, I mean, I'm a huge Daniel Levy fan. I think, you know, he's a boyhood Spurs fan. He owns the club that he's loved since he was a kid. He was a season ticket holder long before he became chairman.
He's also a part owner. Everyone just thinks he's like a dude that Lewis hires to run the team. I mean, he owns significant shares in the team.
Right. So, I mean, you know, like, is this a sort of way of distracting from what's going on the pitch? Yeah, sure, maybe. But you know what? Like, this is the time of year that we administer these reports all the time, like whether things are going well or things are going poorly for us. So, I mean, you know, like, did we turn a profit this year and we didn't last year? And, you know, we may be moving towards a stadium, but we've been doing that since 2006. So, I mean, you know, I'm not unhappy with this financial state of the club. That's something that doesn't necessarily affect me as a fan. And so Levy's ownership and the way he tends to do his business is fine by me.
I think it's hard to be I find it difficult to understand the outrage around Levy that you see in a lot of Spurs fans. To be fair, like, you dig a little deeper, and I think there's more skepticism than it might at first appear of that kind of criticism. I think the progress we made is undeniable. I think anyone, like, I've been to that part of London. It's not, I mean, I've been to Spurs games. It's like, there's a lot of property around there. It's not like there's fields or whatever. It's difficult to buy that up. It's hard to, you know, when you can't just eminent domain everything like you can in America, you know, it's hard to get all that property bought up. And it seems like when we do try to buy some of the property up, we have morons like was it the Boy Hotspur who posted that blog about how we were trying to buy some business out and also give them like a larger piece of property relatively close by. I mean, we're damned if we do and we're damned if we don't in these situations. And I just don't understand where the dissatisfaction is coming from.
Yeah, I have nothing to add. I mean,
I'm right. Nailed it once again.
Come on, you stadium. You know, I hope it happens. It looks like we're making progress. I recognize that there's difficulties. In terms of the other comments, I don't think that, you know, some people will say that there's just an ulterior motive for issuing this and it's just trying to appease the fans. I mean, yes, it's doing that also, but it's not like this is not a pretext to make the fans feel better. I mean, this is just what clubs do. We're not the only club who's issued this in the past week or so. I mean, everybody's doing it. This is what's happening. This is the end of the fiscal year. Financial reports are coming out. So to read anything sinister into the statement is pretty silly.
It's all part of the Sainsbury Illuminati plan for Spurs, man. Yeah, it's I need to rant about this. I'm sorry. Like I read a lot about like Enoch are just flipping Spurs. Yeah, okay. First of all, I think their involvement with this has been pretty long standing. Second of all, and I think you got Ben or Brian, you guys can speak to like sort of the ownership history of Enoch with football clubs. But at the same time, like if Enoch decides to flip us after they've built a new stadium in North London and brought us either as a Champions League entrant or an almost Champions League entrant, like I'm kind of okay with that. If that's what they get out of the deal, like I don't have a problem with that. That's how it went down. Like, maybe I'll hate the new owners more, but that's a pretty good legacy as far as I can tell.
Yeah, there's two ways this can go. I mean, a lot of people see Enoch as they're only in it for the money, which rings a little hollow to me. When you look at the history of Enoch's football ownership, in the mid-90s, they started buying up football clubs all over Europe.
Well, portions of football clubs.
Ranging from portions to entire football clubs.
Generally enough to be in direct, to be the majority owner.
Yes. Right. They bought 30% of Spurs, 25% of Rangers, 97% of Slavia Prague, 47% of AEK Athens, 99% of Vicenza Calcio in the lower leagues of Italy, and 50% of FC Basel. So they had their fingers in a lot of football pies. So much so that, you know, they had to issue a ruling through UEFA saying that two clubs with the same ownership can't compete in the same European competition. And this came up when Slavia Prague and AK Athens are both in the UEFA Cup. And we're now seeing this rule raise its ugly head with respect to Chelsea's potential ownership issues with Vitesse. So the point is, Enoch has owned a lot of clubs over the years and had a strong controlling interest in them, and they've sold off all of them but Spurs.
Who are now run by a boyhood fan who had season tickets. I mean,
right. So the idea that this is like a stepping stone to some larger money-making process seems a little silly. This kind of, to me, looks like their end game. They owned seven different football clubs six different football clubs and are now left with Spurs and are putting a lot of money and a lot of investment into this team. So the idea that there's something really cynical behind the scenes doesn't make a lot of sense. But even if there is, as you said, they've taken this team from, you know, hoping for mid-table and avoiding relegation to we expect Champions League every year. And if they do flip the club, that's only going to leave us in a better position, in theory.
And, I mean, my biggest problem with the idea that Enoch is willing to trade up is where do you trade up to? Like, I mean, there's only, you know, I mean, you can make the argument that that Spurs is one of the 30 biggest clubs in Europe.
I think there's probably – I'm sure people will blow this apart. I think there's probably only 10 to 15 clubs that are bigger than Spurs in Europe.
Yeah,
well, the idea isn't that they're going to flip up to a bigger club ownership. It's that you look at Spurs and see that it doesn't generate a profit year on, so their only return on investment they'll get is going to sell it off for a huge gain. And so that's all they're doing with Spurs is they're building it up to the point where it's a higher valued asset, and then they can sell it for several hundred million pounds more than they bought it for, which is possible and is good business. But again, if anybody's going to be able to afford that several hundred million pounds more, it's going to be someone who has a shitload of cash.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to wind up with, you know, Shad Khan or Randy Lerner or Art Modell or somebody like that. We're going to wind up with like a real person with money. Like it's going to be a Russian oligarch. It's going to be a sheikh from Qatar, something like that. If that's what happens, we're going to wind up with someone with real money.
You know what's going to happen? We're going to get bought by like the richest sheikh in Qatar. And then like someone's going to invent like a car engine that runs on seawater like the next day. I mean, I can just see that happening right now.
That would be very Spurs.
That would
be like football.
Yeah, exactly. So I think this is good for Spurs. I don't see how any rational Spurs fan can be angry about this. I certainly get like I think it's silly. The Stratford stuff, at least, like, I could see why someone would be angry about that. Even if I thought the degree of anger was blown up. But this is like, and you can argue that was just negotiating tactic. We'll never know. But yeah, this is good for Spurs. Getting a new stadium's good. We're owned by responsible people who aren't going to just throw us under the financial bus or stop trying. I mean, this is a ambitious ownership group, and I think the history shows that. So,
right. If they are trying to flip it, the only way this has any value to them is if we're competitive.
And they've stayed competitive. I mean, everyone will say they're strip mining assets by selling all these guys. Like, no, we're selling all these guys because they're able to force a transfer to clubs that are either better and or pay more money than Spurs. I mean, you know, it's how many – I mean, United had to sell Cristiano Ronaldo. Like, it's kind of only because they're willing to overpay for him if they've been able to keep Wayne Rooney. You know, there's no – I mean, Real Madrid and Barcelona might be the only two clubs in the world that don't – or Bayern that don't have to sell players. I mean – if they don't want to. Yes. Anyway, let's move on to questions from the commentariat. Let's start with one from Edward Whiskey, who wants to know, why are so many fans here? I think he's talking about the site, but I think this applies to Spurs fans in general. So quick to get on Vertonghen's back. Brian?
I'll admit I've been guilty of this, but I think he's just been kind of petulant this year. I think you go back to that first Chelsea match where he kind of gets into it with Fernando Torres, and Torres ended up getting sent off, but like Jan didn't really come out of that like looking squeaky clean. And then, you know, I understand that he wasn't happy playing left back, and but like, you know, that was what the team needed, and his he never really seemed like he was a total club guy. Like, hey, you know what? Like, this is my preferred position, but the manager and I have talked, and he knows I'd rather play center back, but I'm doing this for the good of the club. He always came off like, oh, I don't want to do this. The manager knows it. I'm much better playing in this other position, and so I think that's why people get on him. I think he's just seemed this year to be a little petulant. I think it is probably also a little bit of an overreaction to kind of the poor form that we've just seen from the defense under Sherwood. But I think it is like at least founded a little bit in fact.
Yeah, I've seen on Twitter Michael and Brett sort of and Mike Goodman from Grantland and Royal Blue Mersey talking about how, oh, it's just teams taking it out on their best player, and this happens in all sports when things aren't going well. And I think that's true to some extent, and I think it's obviously true because he sort of intimated that he might go to a Champions League club next year, which is whatever. But I think you sort of nailed it, Brian. I think it's he at least seems to have a bad attitude, and that I think we're blowing it out of proportion probably, but it's – it's not nothing, and I think when everything's going wrong, it makes him an easy scapegoat.
Yeah, I think when everything's going to shit, you have to look to your players, particularly your best players, to look like they're out there trying to pull things together. And as much as guys like Hugo Lloris and Sandro have that attitude, Vertonghen doesn't. And for someone who was so great last year and has so much talent, to see him just not really giving a shit, it makes him an easy scapegoat.
Well,
and, you know, next year, once he's good again, I don't think anyone will have a problem with him.
Oh, he's Superman. Loves the shirt.
I don't know if it's fair to say that he doesn't give a shit. I just think that his attitude displays itself and tends to display itself in a more negative way. Like, his reaction to going a goal down is not like a captain sort of rah-rah, like, hey guys, all right, come on, let's go. It's more of a, oh, you guys suck, what the hell were you doing, on that sort of thing. And so I think that's what, and because we've struggled so much in some of these games, I think that's been, for me anyway, the way it seemed.
Yeah, I'm not saying that Vertonghen doesn't care, and I think that narrative is ridiculous, but I think he definitely gives the impression that he might rather be elsewhere, and that pisses people off.
Especially when nothing's going right. And the style, like you guys have said, the style of his play is, like, let's be real, it's a little shitty. What he did to Torres, what he did a few weeks ago, getting – who did he get sent off, Ben? We had a long conversation about that.
Yeah, some guy.
Yeah. I mean, he's a little bit of a shitty player anyway, so, or you know, has a shitty attitude anyway. But yeah, so moving on, inverted fullback must want to express himself on a podcast and hasn't been able to do that. So he asked us, putting aside for a moment that he was on the phone doing who knows what exactly, does it matter to you that Sherwood was sitting in the stands? Ben?
So I'll answer this in two ways. For a manager to be sitting in the stands, I have no problem with. I get the theory. You're trying to get a better view on the game. You can see a more macro level of things. And then you learn stuff, and then you apply it to the game. For Tim Sherwood, who goes up to the stands and comes down and does nothing with that information, it's bad, and it looks bad. You know, he's already under a ton of pressure. He's seemingly giving these guys no direction. And so when he's sitting in the stands for the whole match and not giving anybody any direction, it's bad, and it's a problem.
I agree. I think it's one of those things where if you have competent people working with you or under you or whatever, like it's a duty that you can delegate. Like, I don't have a problem with him sitting in the stands, but that means that you have to have somebody who's competent down on the touchline giving instructions. Now, I don't know anything about Chris Ramsey's qualifications as a coach. I know he's been an assistant manager in our youth teams for a long time. I know he at least has coaching badges. So I'm not, I'm not trying to discount or discredit anything that Chris Ramsey does. I'm sure he's very well respected. But, you know, I don't know enough about him as a sort of tactician or as an assistant manager to have like a super huge amount of faith in his ability to relay tactical instructions to the team. But I also think that like there have been good managers like Jose Mourinho and Alex Ferguson who have sat pitch side and had other people that they trust on their staff, whether that was scouts or other members of the coaching staff sitting in the stand who were then able to relay stuff down to them. I think, you know, as a manager, one of your most important jobs is to be a leader. And I think it's very hard to lead your team from the stands. And I think that Sherwood's problem has been that some of his behavior on the touchline is very petulant and very childish, like throwing the ball at Bakary Sagna or like
who doesn't want to throw balls at Bakary Sagna? I mean, to be fair.
Well, but you know, I mean, you know, spiking his gilet into the bench or whatever. Yeah, you know, I'm very British. but you know, spiking his stupid vest. Like that's not managerial like actions. Like maybe if you're a college basketball coach, it's cool to throw your jacket, but like you're a professional Premier League manager. Like you can't be like going all Alan Pardew and headbutting people on the sidelines. Like you have to be a leader of men. And I feel like it's much harder to do that from the stands.
To Sherwood's credit, he only headbutts people in the dressing room.
Yeah.
He doesn't headbutt them. He punches them in the face like a proper mate. I'm going to go back to what you were saying, Brian. It's not Sherwood's one of his most important tasks to be a leader. It is his most important task. I sympathize with him, especially as a newish manager, that the view is not great from the field, but his job is to lead and give instructions. He needs to find someone he trusts to go up in the stands and communicate with him if you can't see that great on the field. And I get that. It's not.
If he's already taken phone calls during the game, he could take a phone call from an assistant coach.
Yeah, but he's trying to save 15% or more on his car insurance from Geico, or 15% or more in 15 – or whatever it is.
Greg, God. Did you know that you don't even need 15 minutes anymore? You could save twice that much in half the time with e-surance.
Got our first sponsors, you guys. Wheeler Dealer Radio is moving up in the world. Maybe we'll actually get some editing next time. He needs to be on the sidelines. He needs to find a way to make that work because he needs to be giving instructions and motivating players and throwing balls at other players' crotches on the other team or throwing his gilet or generally making weird gestures with his hands. I don't like Sherwood. I don't trust him on the sidelines, but like – you have your job, dude. Like, you need to be in the proper place to do it. And yes, it bothers me. He should be on the sidelines. Actually, he should be like probably in a Sky Sports studio, not on our team. But that's neither here nor there. Let's see. Mr. M asks, in honor of the sadly untrue rumors of Sherwood losing his shit and punching a player, which of our players would you most like to punch? Brian.
Which of our, I, I don't know. Probably. Damn. Can we come back to me? I'm not ready. I don't know.
Ben.
Scott Parker.
Well,
deceased.
Yes. No. I mean, I assume you've had sexual fantasies about that.
So this year, if I could punch anybody, I hate to say this because obviously I wouldn't punch anybody, even Paulinho, but it would be Paulinho. And mostly not because of his performances on the pitch, which I think have been severely subpar for a player who we've seen be really good in other contexts. But recently, quotes came out from Paulinho where he was like, settling in's been really hard. I'm struggling with my English lessons. And frankly, I've been too lazy to really make an effort to learn English. And that just pisses me off. You know, he has this very entitled attitude towards why am I not playing? This is why you're not fucking playing. Like, make an effort.
Strong take. I'm going to go in a different direction. I would punch Sandro because it wouldn't
hurt. Not Tom Carroll?
Well, Tom Carroll's not a Spurs player because he's at QPR and he's going to stay there when Harry's Galacticos stay in the second division. But I would punch Sandro because it wouldn't hurt Sandro, and hopefully I'd be able to live and tell the tale and tell people I punched Sandro. And that would make women love me and the most popular man in the world. So, and then I would punch Tom Carroll, but I do that for free. So.
I feel like I would only punch certain players in like specific circumstances, like when Andrus Townsend blasts a shot from 30 yards out, 10 yards over the goal. Like, then I would run out and punch him. Or like I would punch Michael Dawson when he makes a lazy back pass, or when Kyle Naughton does anything.
My God, it's Brian Ashlock. He's on the field. He's hitting it. Oh, he's busted wide open.
Yeah, I guess if I had to pick, I'd pick Kyle Naughton. But, I mean, I think that's really unfair because Kyle Naughton's not supposed to be that good. But I'm sorry, Kyle. You're very punchable.
He does have really dumb hair. I mean, on Tottenham Hair Club for Men, I mean, Kyle Naughton's hair is pretty awful. Just really terrible. So, actual serious question here from Hugo the Boss. Even though I'm happy that overhaul is not in the cards, who do you think are the five most important players for the future of the club? I think he means players that we could not afford to sell.
Yeah, he said players we could not afford to sell.
Shut up, Ben. You're not the host here.
Brian, you tell us,
because Ben's going to the corner to smoke his cigarettes.
I think with the importance of the fullback in the modern game, I think Kyle Walker has to be one of them. I think Hugo Lloris has to be one of them. I think Christian Eriksen has to be one. I think Eric Lamella, despite whatever people have or haven't seen from him, has to be one. And then a fifth one, I guess the other one has to be Sandro. Those are my five.
Yeah, I think Sandro is on that list. Hugo Lloris, just because I don't want to see Gomez in goal again. I hate to say Vertonghen, but I do think Vertonghen. Our defense is such a mess, and he's so good. I would probably go with Eriksen as well. And, I'd say Kyle Walker. That's a hole we're not prepared to fill if we somehow lost him, which I don't think we will. But, Ben?
I'm going to go with Hugo Lloris. I think he's amazing. I think we could afford to sell Vertonghen because we could get so much money for him. But I'll keep Kyle Walker. I'll keep Eriksen. I'll keep Lamella. And, of course, Tom Carroll.
God, I fucking hate
him. Yeah, I mean, if we lost Tom Carroll, we would be set back like at least a decade.
They would just relegate us on principle.
I think they would.
That's going to happen already, you guys. But the important thing is I wouldn't be able to stand up for a week if we sold Tom Carroll. So. Let's wrap it up with F22A4 Bandit. Describe your perfect date with a Spurs player.
Well, it would start with me and Eric Lamella. And I would be watching him put on his eyeliner before we go out. And then I would complain because it's taking forever for him to do his hair and put on his stupid eyeliner. And, you know, because I made reservations at 7:30, even though nobody in Miami eats till 9:30, I just wanted to make sure that we were able to get a table because open table is ridiculous with their stupid times that they have stuff available. And I would tell Eric, I'd be like, look, we got to leave at 7 if we're going to be there by 7:30. And he'd be like, yeah, 5 minutes. It's fine. It's fine. And then we would be late, obviously, because he sucks. And he, you know, probably injured. And he was 90% ready when I was ready to go, but whatever.
90% ready all evening.
Yes, 90% ready all evening, and he was never ready to order because he couldn't quite decide, and he was 90% on what he was going to order, but he couldn't decide if he wanted the caviar or the ceviche, and I think, you know, my perfect date, and then he would end up paying for it, and, you know, his brother Brian would live tweet our entire date, and I think that sounds like my perfect date with a Spurs player.
Ben.
I'm not going to top that. That's the best.
No. Tell me about your carnal evening with Tom Carroll.
I just let him get rough with me.
Mine would be with Hugo Lloris. We would start with a painting and wine night, one of those drink and paint things. We would show up. He would be wearing a very interesting scarf from the Middle East. I would comment on it. He would nod suggestively and smoke a clove cigarette. As he painted landscapes of the Mediterranean.
Would you tell him to paint you like one of his French girls?
No, I wouldn't because he doesn't have French girls. He has me. and then we would go to a clay sculpting class where we'd reenact the scene from Ghost. I think I would be the person that he would go around the back of because he's got very strong hands that would guide mine. And after that, I would worry about him leaving me for someone in Barcelona for the rest of the evening until he assured me that he was staying in North London forever. And then I would go to hug him, and I would accidentally hit him in the face really hard with my knee. And even though he's unconscious, he'd still go to second base with me.
Your girlfriend sounds incredibly unfulfilled.
You have no idea. Well, that's a high note. I would like to point out none of us said anything about Lewis Holtby.
Are we going to talk about Sunderland?
We are going to talk about Sunderland. I wanted to make jokes about Lewis Holtby first. Brian,
I wasn't trying to take over your hosting duties or anything. I was just curious. It seemed like we were wrapping up. And
no,
I
wanted to make a joke about Lewis Holtby, but now that's ruined. Just like my evening with Hugo Lloris, thanks to concussions. God, fine. Let's talk about Sunderland. Brian, what do you think about Sunderland? Do you think it'll end prematurely because someone will start talking over the game?
I doubt it. Sunderland.
That seems incredibly unlikely.
Screw you guys. God damn it.
Sunderland are winless in their last 7. They've won 1 of their last 9. So they're bad. And we're also bad, but not quite that bad. That's my analysis.
That's hashtag analysis, ladies and gentlemen. I think Sunderland's bad, but Spurs, as bad as Sherwood is, Spurs have good players, and Sherwood's going to just tell them to go run around a bit, and I think that'll probably be good enough to beat Sunderland because they're terrible fascists in hiding.
I think Sunderland has had some really good performances against really good teams like Man City and Liverpool, where they've been very strong defensively, and then they give up the ghost at the end of the game and lose. But terrible against bad teams. And lucky for us, we're a bad team, so we're going to destroy Sunderland.
Womp womp. Well,
sorry to cut you off, but I think, I think Gus Poyet has actually done a decent job with Sunderland. I mean, the results lately haven't been very good. But, I mean, before this kind of really horrible run, they were at least, I believe, above the relegation zone. And I think he's a decent manager, but I think he usually has his teams well-drilled tactically in order to come into games, like, and especially against big teams, like Ben said. So I think that they're going to be set up well to counter us, and I just think it's going to be, you know, a difference, like Ben said, in talent.
Well, the question is, are they going to treat us like a big team, or are they going to attack us?
Yeah, I hope they don't treat us like a big team.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Coming to White Hart Lane, so you'd have to imagine that they would be set up to...
Yeah, probably. Ugh.
A counter.
Ugh. I think Poyet's job has been impressive. I think everyone had that team nailed on as relegation candidates within, like, three games this year. And the fact that it's not a certainty is...
It's a certainty.
Well, not the certainty it was, but... Anyway, God. All right. Now I'm depressed because you guys have made me, you have made a fool out of me, just like Hugo Lloris when I concussed him on our date.
You did not need any help from us. Trust me.
Yeah, really.
You are both the worst. I hate the South so much. Okay, let's wrap it up. For Lennon's Eyebrow and Brian Ashlock, I am Skipjack. I am the best in the world, and this has been the latest edition of Wheeler Dealer Radio. Come on, you Spurs.